I'm not going to sing, but normally I would, because it's time. It's time for Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven. And many people look forward to this moment. So, without further ado, Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven.
Hi, no pressure there. No pressure.
I'm going to start doing, you know, those, shall we say, old-time intros. Ed Sullivan intros.
Ed Sullivan.
For example.
I've been watching Ed Sullivan.
Have you?
Yes, he's on once a week. I don't know what channel, but we have it recording when he's on. In fact, the original Beatles appearance in 1964 was on a few weeks ago. Yeah, well, you know, it was a great show. And he was a stiff, of course. Was the big joke. But he did have the best acts of the time, whether they were acrobats or, you know, hit singers. Anyway, I got hooked, speaking of entertainment, I got hooked on Lydia Bastianich on TikTok. Lydia and I have a very long history. We are exactly the same age, and I discovered her when she had a tiny restaurant in Queens. Happened to be around the corner from my sister's first apartment. So this is the early 70s, I guess, mid-70s. And anyway, Lydia made macaroni and cheese on TikTok the other day. And it got my mouth watering. And the technique was something totally new to me. In the end, I realized that it was... She had turned a northern Italian fonduta, meaning a cheese melt, like fondue, into mac and cheese. Huh. And I thought, oh, that's not a bad idea, actually.
Right.
So I went about doing it. What was different is, now let me just say, I have several mac and cheese recipes that I use all the time. One of them is your standard... Make a bechamel, make a white sauce with milk and a roux, meaning butter and flour cooked together, and then melt cheese into it, and then stir macaroni into it, and perhaps you can eat it just like that, if it's really creamy especially.
Okay.
But you can also pack it into a casserole, top it with maybe cheesy breadcrumbs, but breadcrumbs to make a little crusty top, and stick it in the oven. It's Italian. Pasta al forno, baked pasta. The other one I make is from my friend's dearly departed friend, Suzanne Hamlin, who came up with, I don't know where she got it originally. I'm sure she didn't invent it. But in the Suzanne Hamlin case, you take your already cooked pasta and you mix it with the grated cheese and milk and butter, and you put it in the oven, and halfway through you stir it, and it comes out sort of creamy. I like it, and it's very easy. Another one that I make is from, you know what, I bet you a lot of people think this is their family recipe, but it was a recipe that was written about in the 1950s by Cecily Brownstone. Cecily was the most read food writer in America for 40 years because she wrote a column for the Associated Press, which was, if you were a small-town newspaper, you probably were an Associated
right, wire
Press
service. So basically,
service, right.
It
was free copy.
Yeah.
And Cecily was very popular. She was also a very erudite. She didn't just give you a recipe. She gave you more than that, a cultural context, a history, something like that. And in fact, by the way, she had one of the largest collections of early American cookbooks, which are now as part of the rare book collection at NYU. Anyway, Cecily was one of my mentors. She was already, you know, older. When I met her in like 1970, 71, something like that. And I have great memories of Cecily. And her mac and cheese, I'm looking around here to see if the book, I don't know why the book used to be right next to my desk here, but it's not right now. It's in a book that she wrote that was published in the 60s, and she called it old-fashioned macaroni and cheese. And what it is, oh, I know where I can find the actual recipe. You make it all in one bowl, which I loved, and you bake it in a water bath, and the macaroni is embedded in a delicious custard. It's probably the one that I make most often, Cecily's, but I'm going to find it for you and give you an exact, now that I've raved about this recipe. But let's get back to Lydia. So Lydia took grated cheddar, not Italian at all, but that's okay. She was making mac and cheese. Grated cheddar and grated fontina, which is a mild, buttery, very, very good melting cheese. And she shreds them on the coarse side of the box grater and lets them soak in milk for at least a half an hour, preferably an hour. I did it even more than an hour. She says in this TikTok video that the milk is going to start to break down the cheese. That didn't happen for me. My cheese, you know, it was a nice mixture.
Your cheese is nice and hearty.
But I didn't see any breaking down.
Right.
And it had orange cheddar, so if anything was breaking down, the milk would have turned a little orange, you'd think. Anyway, not important because you then, of course, melt the cheese in the milk until it's a smooth mass of cheese. Now, the proportions I used were half of what Lydia used because Lydia was making it for a large group. And I have to say, baked pasta, as the Italians call it, pasta al forno, is a great dish to make for a crowd. Easter is coming up, and I'm going to tell you about one that's perfect for Easter. But an Italian one that's perfect for Easter. But, you know, mac and cheese is perfect for Easter, too, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, in the fancy restaurants, it reminds me of when I first started as a food writer and you couldn't get mashed potatoes in a restaurant. You had to stay home for that. Nowadays, it's the same thing with mac and cheese. You sort of can't avoid some kind of mac and cheese, even in the fanciest restaurants. So you'll have lobster mac and cheese or crab or truffles, that's a big one. I don't know who's buying real truffles to put in their mac and cheese, but they're fools. So, anyway.
There was a story done many years ago. I don't know which paper you were food writing for, but it was about
Newsday was my first job.
I don't know whether it was Newsday. It might have been slightly after that. But it was about Barbara Walters serving for her fancy dinners with her fancy people that they just loved, little mac and cheeses, little pigs in blankets, little comfort foodies from, that those were her hors d'oeuvres, and how people basically hoovered macaroni and cheese.
I didn't know that, but it sounds like her caterer was my friend Bill Proops. Bill, in his heyday, he was, by the way, the executive chef, that was a silly title for him, at Lehman Brothers, when Lehman Brothers was Lehman Brothers. And his job was not just to be sure the partners had lunch and lunch for their clients, and they didn't have to go to a restaurant to discuss delicate economic things, financial things. But his job was to recommend places for them to go, either socially or with clients. So he was really on top of what was happening in food in New York, and he did cater small dinner parties and even big parties. But his forte was small dinner parties with these comfort food hors d'oeuvres. And you really got me off the track here. On New Year's Day, Bill used to give his own party, a social event. some of the women who worked for him at Lehman Brothers would come to help, and he would serve, like, the new comfort food of the season, like mini hamburgers. We now call sliders, except these were even smaller.
Right.
And fancy pigs in the blanket. I'm not sure what made them fancy. I don't remember. And, of course, always some kind of chocolate thing. So, anyway, you got me off track.
Sorry.
But in the meantime, I found the very recipe for Cecily Brownstone's, quote, old-time macaroni and cheese. And I highly recommend this recipe. I've made it a zillion times. But I have to say, I have the perfect bowl to bake it in. Many years ago at a flea market, I got this nest of ceramic mixing bowls. And I think it's the one-quart or one-and-a-half-quart one that turned out to be perfect for this. So here it is. It's very easy. Beat three eggs together with a teaspoon of Worcestershire sauce, about a quarter of a teaspoon, a half a teaspoon, really, I think you're going to need, of salt, 2 cups of milk, a half a pound of which is an 8 ounce, by the way, cheddar cheese is sold in 8 ounce packages. So an 8 ounce package, a half a pound of the sharpest cheddar you can get. It should be about 2 cups. If you buy more at a time, good for you. Altogether, it should be about 2 cups after you grate it on the coarse side of the box grater. And then you're going to need half a pound of pasta. Now, of macaroni. Of course, classic would be elbow macaroni. But you're not going to believe this, but I have been trouble finding elbow macaroni. You know, I get Italians make tiny elbow macaroni, and the normal American, I don't know what happened to them. But I did score a box of DiCecco, and I've used them up already, one box. But that's the only company I see that makes a decent-sized elbow. If you can't buy the large elbows, I recommend, here's another shape that's not so common, cavatappi, which means corkscrews, or even penne are good.
Can I just ask a quick question? What was your... you had a go-to, it was a different brand that you really liked of Italian pasta, not DiCecco. And I'm asking, they used to, I believe
I buy a number of different things, but...
maybe beginning with a C? I'm not positive.
Well, Garofalo is around all over.
I'm looking for, they had
elbows. What are you looking for?
That's the only reason I'm mentioning.
What are you looking for?
The name of this brand, this mark, had elbows.
Had elbows with a C.
Had elbow macaroni.
I don't know.
Because I got some. That's so.
Well, that's good.
Just.
Yeah, as I said, I don't know why, but it's not so easy to find. So this is very easy, as I said. But you have to have the right container. I would say a 2-quart, to play it safe, a 2-quart glass casserole, which many people have. You don't need to even grease it. So you beat your eggs and until they're combined nicely. Add your Worcestershire sauce and salt. The milk heat separately in a tiny saucepan, and then stir in the cheese until it's melted. And then gradually add this mixture to the eggs. Stir in your half pound of cooked macaroni. And another pan you could use, by the way, is like a 9x9 square pan. That's a good one to use for this. And then place the pan in another pan because you want to do a water bath here. That's the only nuisance about the recipe. Otherwise, you can see it's super easy. And you bake it at 350 for about an hour. It's a low heat, and it's very custardy. And I like it, served immediately, but it's not so terrible if you let it cool. It should be nicely browned, and that's it. And it really is my go-to macaroni and cheese. With the one that I did from Lydia, I wouldn't do again. I'd rather go back to my friend Suzanne's mac and cheese, which is a similar idea, meaning you don't make a bechamel, you don't have eggs, it's just cheese and milk. And in Suzanne's case, she puts in some finely minced onion and butter, couldn't and of course breadcrumbs on top. So let me do a minute on breadcrumbs, because there's hardly a baked pasta I make that I don't need breadcrumbs. And this is something I did learn from Lydia's TikTok. I didn't learn it, but I was reminded of it, let's put it that way. She grated a loaf of bread to make her breadcrumbs. And she started out by saying, don't use fine commercial breadcrumbs, and because she knows that they're too fine for a lot of things. And you shouldn't be buying breadcrumbs at all, she said. You should be making your own. Well, I do make my own, because invariably I have leftover bread, I let it dry out, and then I make it into breadcrumbs. But I did do by hand the other day, and it was satisfying. I took my stale baguette. Now, baguettes usually, at least where I shop, they're very long. So even if you wanted to eat some fresh bread, you could eat some of it fresh and just let it sit for a day or two. And then I grated it on the coarse side of the grater. Now, what's good about this, not having the crumbs so fine, is you get extra crunch on the surface of whatever you're putting the breadcrumbs. People do this with panko. They love panko breadcrumbs because they end up being very crisp. And the reason is there's sugar in panko. And, of course, the way they're made into large crumbs. So you don't need to have sugar in your breadcrumbs. And to get them nice and brown, you can either toast them on top of the stove or you can put them in the oven. I do both, depending on what I'm making. So there you go. I mean, for instance, one of the things I like to do when I get good red peppers is to bake them in the oven with seasoned breadcrumbs on top. I season them myself, fresh parsley or not, maybe oregano, garlic, of course, salt, pepper. Put that all in your breadcrumbs and put it on top of just, I would say, quarters or thirds of red pepper. Put them in the oven at 400, 425. Oil.
I was just going to ask.
Oil in the breadcrumbs. I like to mix the oil in with the breadcrumbs as opposed to drizzle it on.
Right.
It gets more evenly distributed. They get more crunchier. I'm really into breadcrumbs lately, too. And I do like spaghetti with nothing but oil and breadcrumbs. Or if I'm eating alone, anchovies, garlic, and breadcrumbs.
No, that breadcrumbs can really elevate to an entirely new dimension if they're decent breadcrumbs and if
they're
properly
seasoned. Yes, in fact, I used to joke that when I was writing my last Italian cookbook, which is called The Southern Italian Table, that we should call this breadcrumb cuisine, stale bread cuisine. I don't know, but, you know, when you're poor, doesn't matter where you live, when you're poor, you learn how to not to waste anything. And certainly not bread. And you can eat it fresh. And then when I did it yesterday. We get this really good bread in the neighborhood, but I can't finish it while it's fresh, even if we eat sandwiches 2 days in a row or something. But I cubed what was left, which was some of it was just ends, and dried it out in the oven and made some great croutons. And we had those with the Caesar salad last night. So never waste bread.
No. Are you a combo crouton breadcrumb person, or do you use them interchangeably?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I don't...
Just checking.
You know, I make croutons to save the bread.
Yeah.
And then I think of what can I make, like, you know, a good pure... in this time of the year, actually, it's coming up as a traditional thing. St. Joseph's Day is a traditional bean soup day. So if you're making a puree of beans or split peas or a combination, nothing like a good crouton on top. By the way, this bread that we love so much is a whole grain bread. whole wheat bread, not whole grain, whole wheat. And, yeah, but breadcrumbs is something else altogether. That's it. I mean, they could be fresh breadcrumbs, too. But basically, it's here's one for you. Cooked water, they call it, acqua cotta. And that is, you take your stale bread and pour some, and chop some garlic and water and olive oil, and that's it. It's really good. If you pour, it's delicious. And that's it. Oh, so back to the pasta. So there's, in my book, Naples at Table, I still cook recipes from Naples at Table. There's a baked pasta that is perfect for Easter, and in fact is an Easter dish, and it's I call it pastiera rustica. Now, the word rustica in Italian doesn't mean rustic. It means savory as opposed to sweet. So the pastiera that everybody knows, or if you know Italian food knows, pastiera is an Easter pie made with grain, usually whole grain wheat, that's cooked. You can buy it in a can, by the way, but don't. I have. Don't. And you can cook your own. It's nothing to do. But and the pie is delicious. But this is a rustica, a savory pasta and cheese pie. And it has all the foods that you probably were craving during Lent, but you weren't supposed to eat, which is to say, it's a baked pasta with provolone, pancetta, soppressata, which is a kind of salami, you can use other salami, grated cheese, and eggs. So what you need for this, though, is I tried making this with fresh egg pasta that you can buy these days in the supermarket, and truthfully, I found it too heavy. So what I do use is the dried egg pasta. There are a number of brands on the market. Should be labeled tagliolini or tagliarini. If you can't do these very narrow, fine pastas, how about tagliatelle, which is more like fettuccine, and in fact will be labeled fettuccine. Right. But I like the very fine ones for this dish. And you boil them up, you toss them with some butter, just so that they don't stick together, and the mixture is 2 cups of milk. But I would actually, because this is something, a method that I learned in Italy, but I use it for American things now too. If I'm making a baked pasta and I'm not going to cook it immediately, even if I am, I might soak the macaroni in something cold. It'll absorb a little bit of whatever it is, usually milk, but could be tomato sauce even, and it'll absorb some of it, and it also will prevent it from sticking together, and you're going to add it anyway. So 2 cups of cold milk, I would beat it with 4 large eggs, add, I would say, 2/3 of a cup of grated Parmigiano, which is about 2 ounces, and the same amount of pecorino, which is also about 2 ounces, maybe a little less. Sometimes I find pecorino weighs different. Pepper. You want a good amount of pepper in this, at least a half a teaspoon of pepper. And now, I make this in a huge terracotta, I forget what you call it in Spanish, teglio in Italian, ceramic pan. But you can make this in, you know, your standard roasting pan, too. So once you get all that mixed together, the cheese, the eggs, the milk, grease your pan, and then into the milk and cheese mixture, you're going to put in provolone, which you've cut into tiny dice, quarter-inch dice. It's going to be at least 3/4 of a cup. And then the same thing with pancetta, cut into the same tiny dice, about 3/4 of a cup. And I buy, by the way, very flavorful pancetta, but this is, in fact, a mild dish if you use the pancetta that comes from the supermarket. By the way, I say 4 ounces, and the packages of already diced pancetta come in 4-ounce packages, so that's easy. And soppressata is a kind of salami. I would buy one big piece and cut it into quarter-inch dice. If you want to use another salami, fine. Stir that in, pour it into your very well-greased or buttered pan, and stick it in a 350-degree oven. It's going to take almost an hour or an hour. The top should be lightly browned, and you want to, you don't want to serve this immediately at all. Time it so that it gets a good 20 minutes to rest before you cut into it. It could be a half hour. It doesn't even have to be hot from the oven at all. It's pretty good at room temperature. And in fact, I haven't made this in a while, but I used to make it quite often when I was entertaining more than 6 people. And there was always leftovers because it wasn't the only thing on the table. And I discovered it really does reheat very well in a microwave oven. Did I say how much pasta? This is for a pound of dry pasta.
Say it again.
It's a pound of dry egg pasta, either tagliolini or tagliarini. You know, they're different names, but a fine, narrow egg pasta. By the way, sometimes these egg pastas, at least the ones I buy, come in 8-ounce packages, 8-ounce boxes, so you need 2. And as I said, too, I made this with fresh tagliarini or tagliolini that you can buy in the supermarket, but I find fresh pasta, most of it, too heavy for this. And the dry pasta is perfect. Okay. You'll love it. It's real good. I mean, if you're having people over for Easter, this is a really good Easter dish. So eggs in general, you know.
Yeah.
And custards. And
no, I just...
And by the way, if you're Jewish, you won't be able to make this for Passover, but we eat a lot of kugel. What is that but baked pasta?
A.K.A. noodle pudding.
A.K.A. noodle pudding, right. Yeah, I love noodle pudding myself.
Yeah, as we have determined long ago, our mercifully our families, well, neither one of us, even though you can and I refuse, neither one of us does sweet noodle pudding. Sweet, I remember.
No, we don't. But we're definitely in the minority.
I can't help it.
And, you know, I don't know what's going on there. I should check it out because this is a store right near my dentist, kosher caterer takeout store. Years ago, you would go. It was a kugel wonderland. They had, like, I don't know how many kinds of kugel, starting on Thursday, working up to Shabbos, of course. They had all kinds of kugel, and it was all on display. And one day I walked in there, and the owner, I don't remember why we were talking even, but I said, what happened to all the kugels displayed? Now they're all behind glass or blah, blah, blah. He said, the health department. They don't let me display the kugel on the top shelf anymore. And it really was a sight. I said, but I was just in this other store a few blocks away, and they had all their food exposed. He says, I'll just tell you one thing. I don't pay off the inspectors. So that's the story. I guess kugel can kill.
And the story from this end is?
Time's up.
I know. Okay, time's up.
I am today actually making a pasta al forno, a baked pasta, because I made a very large quantity of bolognese the other day. I froze some of it, we ate some of it, and the rest of it I'm going to turn into a Sicilian baked pasta. I'll tell you about it next week when we have more time.
I'll remember. Thank you very much, and happy upcoming everything.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, we appreciate you very much.